Sean, did you see the pass? Did you see the Trevor Zegras pass in the Anaheim Ducks New York Islanders game Wednesday night? Just several hours ago. We're recording this Thursday morning. Did you see the pass that Zegras made? And did you love it?
What else do you think I'd be doing, Dan, on a Wednesday night?
Look, I don't know what you do.
I watch hockey. And of course I saw it. I don't think it was as good as the Sonny Milano lob pass that made Trevor famous. But between the legs, past the defenseman, backhand, right on the guy's stick. Not too shabby. But why aren't we... See, you're being privileged again. Why aren't we talking about Nick Seeler?
Nick Seeler? Let's talk about Trevor Zegras. I'm sorry.
Dude, the goal that kid scored, he looked like Bobby Orr.
All right.
Give the man credit. He'll never score a goal like that again.
Probably not. But the thing is, Trevor Zegras will continue to make passes like that. And I'm going to make a case here. I'm going to make an argument here that this pass from Zegras was better than the one to Sonny Milano. And it was because it was in constant motion. He had to get the puck on the rush on a 2-on-1 and put it through his legs with defense near him and then backhand the pass. Now Pulak's there. He backhands it in front of Ryan Pulak. So against the grain, right on the tape to Kevin Shattenkirk. The Anaheim Ducks are struggling. They're rebuilding. But I could watch this guy all day long, and he is an absolute star. And I think because of those reasons, because this had to happen in constant motion, it's a better pass than the one to Sonny Milano.
Well, we can argue about that. Maybe we'll do a state your case on NHL.com about it.
It would be a good one, right?
Yeah. No, he's great. And that's one of the reasons to tune in. I tune into the Ducks to watch John Gibson because I'm a goalie guy, and you know, he gets a lot of work, got a lot of work again. Faces a lot of high quality chances. So, you know, his numbers aren't as good as they've been in the past, but he's still awesome to watch. But of course, you know, they have some skill on that team that you want to watch, and you hope that they're going to grow together and they're going to get better. And they're going to be a little like Buffalo is right now, where some of their young guys have grown together and now they're on the cusp of, competing for a playoff spot. So we can argue until the cows come home which one's better, but they're both unbelievable. And I think the most exciting thing is there's kids all across this great land of ours hitting the ice today for practice who are going to try and make that move.
Yeah. Good luck to making it.
Not only are there kids that are going to hit the ice today, there's going to be morning skates and practices all around the NHL with grown men who are supremely skilled try to make that move.
There's going to be grown men and grown women in beer leagues trying to make that move and falling down, probably doing it. I know I would.
Pulling their groins.
Exactly. So the other thing, I mean, as we record this Thursday morning, the other thing that happened, obviously, it was wild second period in the Wild Blues game. And obviously, Jordan Binnington didn't like what Ryan Hartman did, comes out, blockers him right in the face. He's going to have a hearing with Department of Player Safety. We're going to have Ryan Hartman on this podcast today, just in a few minutes from now. Pretty good timing on our part to get Ryan Hartman from the Minnesota Wild. And the Wild, by the way, rolling along right now. I think 11-0-3 in their last 14 games.
You need to start thinking and start looking things up before you come on the podcast.
What did I get wrong?
Nothing. You said you think they're 11-0-3.
Oh, I was like, what did I get wrong? I'm like,
let's be definitive here.
Well, you know, sometimes you don't want to just sound like an encyclopedia. You got to make it so, you know, you're not, yeah, maybe you're, no, they're 11-0-3.
You want to sound unknowledgeable? That's what you're going for? Because you're really good at it.
Well, I know. I do that sometimes. I can hit those notes sometimes. No, but we're going to have Ryan Hartman on in a couple minutes from now. So look forward to that. But first, I'm back. I got back last night, back to the grind, shall we say, back from Florida, where I was for the NHL general managers meetings. And look, wasn't a ton of news to come out of the GM meetings. And Sean, you were covering these meetings with me about 10 years ago, 11 years ago, when it seemed like the game was falling apart and the GMs had to put it back together. Remember those days where we were talking about hits to the head and outlawing those and what do we do with the shootout and games taking forever and all these things, fighting, all these things, right? Well, the GMs didn't even make a tweak, didn't even recommend a tweak for out of these meetings, but they had some pretty healthy discussions on what I think are some really interesting topics. The fact that they're allowed to have these healthy discussions and kind of walk away from these meetings saying, we'll wait and see and continue to analyze, really shows where the game is right now. And not to just regurgitate, you know, what Gary Bettman says, but if you don't see it, you're not watching and you're not paying attention, because this game is in a really good place. And you know it if the GMs can go down and meet for Florida in 3 days and just have healthy discussions about the future of the game.
As people who care deeply about the game, our listeners, us, ourselves, I mean, this is what we do for a living. The fans live and die by everything that happens. I think we get in this echo chamber where, you know, we do a lot of navel gazing and we want to pick out what's wrong with the game. And are there things that everybody would like to see better? Yes. But for a casual fan who tunes in and is like, hey, here's a game of hockey, like it's at a place it's never been. I mean, we opened up talking about Trevor Zegras. You know, 10 years ago, that wasn't happening. The game wasn't open enough for that to happen. So to have discussions about really minor things that could possibly make the game better instead of these pressing issues that need to be addressed in order for the health of the game to remain, I think is a huge testament to where we are. I mean, the business is better. The product on the ice is better. You look at the playoff races, they're unbelievable. I think you really have to be in a negative headspace to find something, to find a major flaw with the game today.
Yeah, I agree with you. And just some numbers. I mean, the big news Wednesday when Gary Bettman talked, I thought was the salary cap. We wrote about that on NHL.com. And right now the salary cap is at $82.5 million. It's been flat. This is the fourth year, essentially. It's gone up $1 million. It was $81.5 million for three straight years. Went up $1 million, $82.5. Current projections have it going up just another million to $83.5 for next season. But there's a chance that it could go up higher than that. And the fact that there's a chance that it could go higher really speaks to where the game is at right now. Because remember, when we were in COVID, the players were getting paid in full. The owners were not. There had to be an escrow debt owed to the owners that was supposed to be paid off over several years. It was about $1.5 billion. Well, it's down to about $100 million. Right now that's owed. And if hockey related revenues can exceed current projections by about that $100 million, and it's possible depending on playoff revenues, that salary cap, instead of going up to $83.5 million, could go up in the neighborhood of $87 million, for go up to the neighborhood of $87 million for next season. And if it doesn't happen next season, it will happen the season after that, because that escrow debt that the players owe to the owners will be paid off. If not this season, certainly next season. That was the big takeaway for me yesterday, is the fact that we're approaching, in the NHL being a $6 billion league, how strong it's come back from COVID. And they didn't think that this escrow debt was going to be paid off probably until the 24-25 season. And now we're looking at it potentially being paid off at the end of the 22-23 season.
Everybody's playing to full buildings for the most part. Again, you talk about the competitive balance. You look at a team like New Jersey, right, who's been good this year. They played the other day at Carolina for first place in the division on a Sunday night, and the building was full. When's the last time you can say that about New Jersey? And that's going on across the league. Obviously, Seattle and Vegas have helped as well. Toronto being perennially good has helped. Like I said, financially, we're in a good place. So the product on the ice is in a good place. And I think they're reflective of each other. You're not in a good place in one if you're not in a good place in the other. If the product is not consumable, it's not being consumed.
Yeah, we're also coming off one of the most exciting trade deadline seasons that we've had ever, I think, in the National Hockey League. And I got a story about that coming out on NHL.com on Friday. So that'd be tomorrow if you're listening to this on Thursday when we are recording it. Again, we're going to have Ryan Hartman from the Minnesota Wild on here shortly. But there were a couple of topics, as I mentioned, that I think, you know, were worthy of healthy discussion to GMs. And I'd like to get your feeling on it as well, Sean. So the first one, the expansion of video review, they're discussing that. Remember, the coach's challenge was put in place a couple of years ago to correct goals, essentially, right? I mean, that's what it was for. Offside, was a goal scored after an offside play? Should that goal have been allowed? Yes or no. Challenge that. Goalie interference, same thing. Not as black and white. They put it in, though. Challenge that. And it extended to challenging, was a goal scored after what should have been a stoppage of play in the offensive zone. So that's also available for a challenge. Now they're talking about the potential of a coach's challenge or an expansion of video review to review penalties, specific penalties of minors for high sticking and delay of game penalties on puck over the glass. It's very interesting that they're looking at penalties now for coach's challenge or just an expansion of video review. And I actually think a way to go with this is a coach's challenge to, if you're going to expand the video review on this, is to do it through a coach's challenge. Because remember, the penalty for being wrong on a coach's challenge is a penalty already. If you want to challenge a high sticking minor or you want to challenge a puck over the glass penalty, you better be 100% right. If not, it's a 5-on-3. So you won't be getting too many challenges on this, but you'll have the ability to expand the video review. The coach will have the ability to do that. The NHL is giving that ability. So you're using the technology, but you're not overusing the technology. I think that is actually a way to go rather than have the official review his own work. Right now, they review their own work on double minor high stickings to see if it's friendly fire. Like if you're my teammate and I get hit, but it's your stick that hits me, that's friendly fire. If they call a double minor high stick on that, they go to the review. Oh, wait, no, they can rescind that. I don't know that you want to do that on a minor penalty for high sticking, because as Stephen Walcom pointed out, the director of officiating, there's about 100 double minors per year, and about 30 to 40% of those get reviewed by the officials. There's about 750 to 800 regular minor high sticking penalties. Now you want to review 30 to 40% of those. That's a lot more reviews.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, the way I look at it though, is if you have a review in place for anything and your argument is to get it right, why isn't it for everything? Right? Like if the argument is to get it right, why not make it for whatever a coach wants to challenge? I think with the penalty in place, that will limit it to a degree. The other thing I think is if you look at that and you think about that, you need to get the process right. Right? It needs to be immediate. You can't have, like, I was at the Devil game the other day against Tampa Bay, and they had a goalie interference call, and the goal by the Devils got taken off, but they waited a good minute for John Cooper to decide whether he was going to challenge or not. The iPads came out. They were looked at. The video coach was in the back room, you know, going over that video as fast as he can. Split second, man. This happened. I'm calling high stick. You want to review it or not? No looking, no nothing. You tell me right now or we move on.
See, here's my problem with reviewing, given the ability to review everything. The technology exists to do that. Let's be clear on that. And I am all for let's get it right. I understand that argument. It's not an argument. It's what we want. We want it to be right. But are you saying go ahead and review a hooking call? Go ahead and review a slashing call? Because those are judgment calls. I mean, goalie interference is a judgment call, to be honest with you. And we gave that ability. So maybe there is that argument. You know, there's already the precedent for it, right? But you're extending games essentially by doing that, and now we're reviewing what really is the discretion of the referee, you know, and that's the human part of the game that I don't want removed from the game. And you're like, look, in baseball they're talking about, you know, removing umpires, the home plate umpire, just, you know, have it robotic, whatever it is, all the technology to do that, and they probably have the tech to do that, but something that takes away from that game to do it. I think that human part of it, these are human beings playing the game. There should be human beings reffing the game. And I don't know that I want an official going to review a hooking, a slashing, you know, things like that. If it's black and white, high stick is black and white, right? I mean, if it's my stick or it's your stick, for the most part, 99% of the time it is. Sometimes on video review, it can be hard to tell whose stick it is. That one, you know, puck over the glass, did it deflect? Did it not deflect? Did it hit the netting? Did it not hit the netting? You can pretty much get that down to a science. But a hooking, a holding, a slashing, a cross-checking, this is a little harder. I'm not so sure I want that.
Well, like I said, if you want right, give him the opportunity to get it right. Maybe the referee made a mistake. Like, I don't understand why you're allowed to question a referee on one call and not on another call. But the penalty's the same. Like, it doesn't matter. Challenge whatever you want, but you're going to be wrong. Right.
If that's true.
If you're going to challenge a tripping and the ref decided it was tripping, but if it changes a game fundamentally, challenge it. That's your right. If you're going to open things up to a challenge, who are we to decide what a coach challenges? Challenge it. Limit the number of challenges. Make it all strategy.
I see your point. I guess I'm just against too much of it. You know,
so you play God and you pick and choose what they challenge.
Well, that's what the rule book's for. Yeah. Make the rules.
Okay.
You know,
maybe they could just call you every night.
Well, no, hey, I'm saying,
hey, Dan, we're thinking about challenging this. Is this okay in your viewpoint?
I think that's what they should do. No, I'm not making rules over here. All right. Well, look, it's an interesting debate. And I think that's why they're having it. Right. I mean, it is the thing that if you do go down the path of adding a coach's challenge for penalties now, even ones like high sticking and puck over the glass, where does it end? I think that's what you're saying. Like, or why should it end? You know, that's the debate. The other one that they were having was fighting after clean hits. I don't like it. I don't know of anybody who does like the fact that a guy can lay a clean body check and then have to drop the gloves because of that. We are seeing that in the game. I can't say with certainty that we're seeing more of that in the game right now. I actually think because the physicality in the game is the same, but those big hits, they're probably not as seen as often. You know, those like hits that you see a Jacob Trouba throw, like when we see it happen, it's jarring because it doesn't happen so often anymore. But these hits that are clean, should a guy have to then drop the gloves to fight? And look, the debate here is, well, he doesn't have to fight, right? I mean, that's what I heard from a couple of GMs and Coley Campbell as well, is, you know, he doesn't have to fight. You know, if a guy comes up and challenges you and you know, the mentality of the game is to not back down, right? So he may not want to fight, but he kind of probably with the mentality feels like he's got to go.
There's still free will, right?
There is. And I think this, the point, but the question, I guess, with this whole thing that I should have brought up at the top of it is the instigator penalty, right? So is the instigator penalty being called enough to deter guys going after a player who hits your guy cleanly? Right now, I'll give you the numbers. This was entering this week. There were 271 fights in the NHL this season, which it's in itself is a very low number, which tells you fighting is down. Of those 271 fights, 100 came in defense of a player who was hit. 89 of those 100 were after what were deemed clean hits. There were 21 instigator penalties given. So you're only talking about a quarter of those were instigator worthy, according to the officials. Now, the instigator penalty comes with a minor, a 5-minute major, and a 10-minute misconduct. So it's 17 minutes in penalties, right? And the question is, should the instigator penalty be called more? Call it when it's warranted. Are officials reluctant to call it because they don't want to put a guy out for 17 minutes? All of those questions come into play. And I think that's more the debate here. It's not that there is an issue or a rule change needs to be made. It's should, at the discretion of the officials, the instigator penalty be called more often, or at the very minimum, the bare minimum, should the guy on the team who laid the clean hit, should his team at the end of it end up with the power play, however it may be? That's really where the debate is, I think.
Yeah, I don't see a debate. Call the instigator like it was written up in the rule book, and consequences be damned, right? So a guy sits for 17 minutes. Again, yeah, there's free will. You don't have to fight. You also don't have to start a fight.
Right.
Like, there's other ways to get a guy back for hitting somebody clean. Go hit him clean.
Take a number, right? And that is, you know, that was brought up as well. Like that, you know, take his number, you know, dole it out later, but do it cleanly. Obviously. And I think player behavior in itself, we know that player behavior in itself has changed to when things are happening like this. For the most part, it is being done in a clean way. But here's the thing that I think is lost and forgotten in all of this. If you hit my guy, Sean, I'm not judging whether it's clean or not. I don't have the video review in the split second where I go, whoa, to know if that hit is clean. I see you lay out my guy. My mentality is to go after you because you knocked down, you laid out my guy, you know, to a little justice for laying out my guy. The players themselves are not looking at, well, it was a clean hit, so I guess I can't go at him, right? That's not the mentality. That's not where they're going with this. But that's where it becomes the officials. And I think what will come out of all of this is the NHL just kind of encouraging the officials to call the instigator more where it's warranted. Don't err on the side of no instigator, err on the side of instigator. Put them out for 17 minutes because it'll act as a deterrent. But they're not reviewing the hit before they go out. Nobody's reviewing the hit before they go after a guy who did the hitting.
No, and I also think it's so jarring now. Fighting is so far down and it's almost unexpected in games.
Yeah.
That when it happens, it's jarring. Like these 10 years ago, this would be nothing. You wouldn't even notice it in a game because of the way that the game was played. And now it's played so differently. And we have so many skill guys and that's a great thing, but you don't want those guys to get hit. So I understand all that, but I think these plays that they're talking about are almost jarring when you see them now, because they're so far out of the realm of normal play that you want to try and legislate them in some way. And again, I just think, you know, players learn. You know, you do that three times in a season, not only have you taken 51 penalty minutes, but now you're going to be suspended for a game and somebody else is going to get a chance to take your job. So I think players understand punishment and they're always going to push that line, right? Oh, I'm going to go after him. You're not brave enough in a close game to call the instigator on me, so I'm going to get away with it. Well, it's black and white.
Right.
You throw your gloves down first. The other guy doesn't want to engage with you. That's an instigator.
Yeah. I was just impressed, by the way, that you went right to the 51 minutes, which was 17 times three.
I had a little scratch pad here.
No, it was impressive. No, look, I agree. You know, I think the instigator, that's the solution if this is a problem, right? That the instigator is just, it's in the rule book. It's in the rule book for a reason. It's probably got to be used a little bit more than it is right now.
You know what's funny, Dan?
Yeah.
Is everybody hated the instigator.
Right.
And now they want it called more.
Now you want to call more. Also, you know what's interesting, Sean? Is the fact that 10 years ago, 11 years, 12 years ago, the discussion wasn't about what do we do after clean hits. The discussion was what do we do after all these dirty hits, right? And they made obvious rule changes to that that has changed player behavior to the point now you and I and the GMs this week have discussed clean hits. Kind of tells you where we've gone, I think.
No, I agree 100%. I don't see it as an issue personally.
Yeah. But Sean, there was one big piece of news at the that came out during the GM meetings that impacted at least one general manager there. And it was the Andrei Svechnikov injury. Carolina Hurricanes forward out for the season and the playoffs with a torn ACL in his right knee, requires surgery. I believe he's having that surgery today, Thursday. And I was able to catch up with Don Waddell about that, their GM. And look, Waddell, obvious disappointment. I thought what was interesting when I asked him, have you talked to Andre about it yet? And he said that he had. And Svechnikov's reaction was to apologize to Don Waddell for getting hurt. You know, if you saw the play, it's an innocent play. Nothing happened to him. He didn't get hit. It was nothing. It was a non-contact injury. It looked like he hit a rut in the ice or stumbled in some way. And that ended, you know, didn't end his game. It was against Vegas. And he actually came back in that game, but didn't play against New Jersey. And then it was revealed through testing and imaging that he had a torn ACL in his right knee. And that is a huge blow to the Carolina Hurricanes. Look, they were already without Max Pacioretty, who's a goal scorer. Now they're out another goal scorer. So it's not a team that went out and added a goal scorer at the deadline. They added playmaker guys like, you know, Shane Gostisbehere. They didn't add a goal scorer like this. He is an elite talent. He is a go-to guy. I remember talking to Rod Brind'Amour earlier this season I asked Rod Brindamore, who's the best player in Carolina Hurricanes history, and his response was, well, it's going to be Svechnikov. Not yet, but it's going to be. And now he is out on a team that has Stanley Cup aspirations. I don't know that they can go win the Stanley Cup without a huge part of their offense, or two huge parts of their offense, when you consider Pacioretty too.
Yeah, no, I think they're in deep, and Andre's a guy after my own heart. Every time I get hurt, I apologize to whoever's near me. you know, you feel awful for the kid because obviously he took it really hard. He feels like he's let his teammates down. I look at the Carolina Hurricanes like I look at the New Jersey Devils of their glory days. Like, to me, they're interchangeable parts, and Andre may be the bigger, the biggest part of that, but they have other pieces, and they play such a team game that maybe they can survive. I mean, look, we're going to talk to Ryan Hartman, and they said after Kirill got hurt, Kirill Kaprizov, that where would the goals come from in Minnesota? And they've scored 17 goals in their last three games. So they found a way. Even Ryan Reeves is like, oh, well, Kirill's out, I'm going to have to step up. And he scored last night. So, and that was all tongue in cheek. But I think sometimes those things bring out the best in other players. I think it's harder for them to win now. But again, I think they play a system that limits shots so much and creates opportunities for them that's ideal for the playoffs. And they have good enough goaltending where I think they can survive. It's just going to be much harder.
They can't overcome this one. Yeah, that's my opinion, is they're not going to be able to overcome this one. And the reason I say that is because coming out of the trade deadline, you looked around the Eastern Conference and you saw all these teams at it, right? All these teams made significant additions. You know, the Devils, Timo Meier, the Rangers, Tarasenko and Kane, the Islanders, Bo Horvat, right? I mean, you look at the Bruins made some of their additions, you know, maybe not as bright lights, spotlight stars as those, but we're, you know, look, Tyler Bertuzzi and, you know, Hathaway and Orlov and Tanner Janot with the Lightning, just another guy who's going to make it harder to play against for them. And Ryan O'Reilly in Toronto, the Carolina Hurricanes kind of stood pat in that department, right? They didn't add a game changer. Gostisbehere is a nice player. He's a good fit on their power play. It makes their power play better. Is he a game-changing player? I don't think so. They didn't necessarily have one either. He's the closest one that they've got in Svechnikov to being that breakaway game-changing player. Aho's a terrific player. Teravainen's a terrific player. Neither one of those guys is like, you're going to be like, well, he is going to change the game. That's going to, you know, win us a playoff game without question. They could, maybe, but these other guys that I just brought up that these teams added, a lot of them do that. Like, that's their role. And the Carolina Hurricanes didn't add a guy like that, and they didn't necessarily have one. And Svechnikov is the closest one to it, and now he's out. So that's why I think, as good as their system is, and it's very good, and they are going to still be very hard to play against, and they're going to be very hard to beat. Their goaltending is not as good as some of these other teams, and they're a system team that helps their goaltending. And now they don't have that game-changing type player either. The guy that you put on the ice when you need a goal and you absolutely have to have one, that's Svechnikov for this team. He's out. They don't have it. They're not going to have it this season because of that.
You were at the Stadium Series, right?
I was. Yes, of course. You were there too. We were there together. Yeah.
Did you forget what happened in that game?
I actually have. Sorry.
There was a cat that played for that team. Martin.
Oh, Natchez. Yeah, Natchez. He's a good player. Is he a game breaker? You think he could be?
Yes.
Okay.
Did you see him in the Stadium Series? Have you seen him play this year?
Yeah, I have. I have also not, you know, seen Martin Natchez, you know, be a game breaker when it really matters that much. You know, like in the playoffs, he was kind of invisible in the playoffs last year. He was invisible.
Have you seen anybody in Carolina be a great game breaker in the playoffs?
No, and that's why they can't get through, Sean. That's why they can't get through.
And or maybe this is the year that their game breakers are old enough now that they've learned their lessons. So
Svech was one of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And maybe Carolina, you know, thought that they had the best team and they didn't need to mess with it.
Right.
Like Toronto didn't think they had the best team. They changed one third of their roster.
Correct.
That's crazy.
It is. It is. And Carolina did have that mentality. Talk to Don Waddell about that, right? I mean, they loved their team. And he said at the deadline, The goal here is to stay healthy and get ready for the playoffs. Now they're not healthy. They lost a huge part of that team. And it comes a few days after the trade deadline. And it's a killer. It's an absolute killer because it comes after the deadline. Look, I may be proven wrong. Rod Brindamore is a terrific coach. This is a good team. They play a terrific system, but I don't think that they have enough offense, and you still need to score in the playoffs. You got to play hard defense. You got to get great goaltending. You got to be strong on the walls. You got to do all of those things hard to play against to win in the playoffs. Still have to score goals. You still have to get three or four a game. And I don't know that they're going to be able to do it. And I don't think they're going to be able to do it.
Okay. Well, I do. All right. I don't know if they get all the way, but I think they're one of those teams, certainly in the East, that I don't want to see in the playoffs, even without Svech. I don't want to play that team. If I'm anybody else and I've spent all that capital to make my team better, and all of a sudden you say, hey, let's go play the Carolina Hurricanes. No, thanks.
Is there a team in the Eastern Conference that you want to play?
Yeah.
Who?
Pittsburgh Penguins.
Oh, yeah. You want to go play Sidney Crosby in the playoffs?
The New York Islanders.
They're hard to play against. Great goaltending.
The Washington Capitals, if they make it. Whoever those bottom two teams are. Yeah, I want to go play. Right now, you know who I want to go play? The New York Rangers.
You do? Interesting. Yeah. That's an interesting one. Okay.
I want to go play the New York. And if I'm the New Jersey Devils right now, I want to go play the New York Rangers.
Okay. All right. Listen, here's
how many games have they won in regulation?
Their
last 13. How many?
It's a fair debate to have. It's a fair argument that you're making here. Let's do Ryan Hartman. Let's get to Ryan Hartman. We teased it enough. So let's do the interview with Ryan Hartman. He was obviously in the news on Wednesday. Big night, wild night in St. Louis. Got the blocker in the face from Jordan Binnington. Scored a couple of goals. 8-4 win. He was kind enough to join us. Let's do the Ryan Hartman interview. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into that, what you were just saying, the Rangers thing. So here's that interview with Ryan Hartman. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us. Good to get you on at this time, less than 24 hours after. Certainly, you were center stage in a wild one in St. Louis. Just take us through that, and no pun intended on that one, by the way. Just take us through what that night was like, that second period was like. What was it like being in a game like that?
Yeah, I guess some good timing with the scheduling this interview. You know, we've always kind of had a bad rep with St. Louis with playoffs, and I don't know, we've kind of say a little bit of rivalry, and you know, we always kind of play hard against each other, and you know, obviously it's part of the game, and you know, things weren't looking good for us in the first period, but we were able to I don't know what it was. I think we scored like 3 goals in less than 2 minutes at one point. And yeah, then things started to kind of get a little out of hand. And but that's the kind of hockey, you know, we like. It's the kind of hockey I think fans like. And I think we had a good time with it.
Why do you guys like it?
I mean, we're in the entertainment business, right? I mean, it's better than just a 1-0 hockey game and flipping the puck out of the zone and no offense. I mean, obviously we'd like to not give up 5 goals, but when we're scoring 8 goals, we're going to win a majority of those games. So I think it was just an entertaining hockey game for everybody.
When things like that happened last night with you and Binnington and all the stuff that went along with it and Fleury coming out of the net and everything, how imperative is it to win that game when that stuff is all going on, like to end the night saying, hey, you know, all that went on and we ended up on top. That seems pretty essential if you're, you know, thinking of the Minnesota Wild here.
Yeah, I mean, I probably have a different opinion if we lost, to be honest with you. I mean, I might not be sitting here saying how much I enjoyed that game. But, you know, that's how it went. Obviously, you know, everyone respects everyone. Everyone, you know, it's hockey. You know, sometimes games are played harder than other games. Sometimes things happen throughout the game and emotions get high. And that's kind of what happened last night.
Ryan, you've done a lot of winning lately at 11-0-3 in your last 14. What do you think the difference is with the Wild during the stretch?
I mean, for the most part, we've defended really well. You know, we were winning a lot of one-goal hockey games. You know, I think the last 3-4 games maybe hasn't been our best defensively, but we found ways to, you know, to get wins and to get at least a point. I mean, we let up a 2-goal lead in Arizona. I'd say that 1 point was kind of a letdown for us. We would like to get 2 there. Scored in overtime against Calgary. That got turned back from offsides. Then they ended up winning in a shootout. You know, those are still 2 big points that we didn't collect that we would have wanted to. So we're obviously just trying to continue this train rolling. And, you know, we got a pretty tight race with you know, Colorado on our back. And, you know, we're also chasing Dallas. So, you know, there's a lot of hockey still to be played. And, you know, anything can happen.
How much do you guys in the room talk about first place?
I mean, we're just trying to do our job by winning. I mean, we're not necessarily scoreboard watching. We're not like, oh, I hope Dallas loses tonight. I mean, obviously, yeah, first place is first place, you know. Is there maybe an advantage? Maybe for home ice, yes. You know, obviously it's, you know, last year we battled with St. Louis right after the trade deadline. I don't know what our combined records were. I think we were like 20. I can't remember what our record was, but we were battling for second place to get home ice and still end up losing in the first round. So, I mean, yes, it matters, but realistically, it doesn't really matter until, you know, you're in those playoff games. But, you know, like I said, home ice is a big advantage if you can get it. So obviously we're trying to push and just win as many games we can without relying on other teams to lose. So we're just trying to do our jobs.
During this run and pretty much all season, your goaltending has been huge for you. Marc-Andre has been good during this run. Gus has been great all year. Like, what's the advantage when you go pretty much into every game and you know, 95% of the time you probably have the better goaltender?
It's huge. Having a 1-2 tandem, I mean, you look at teams that have won cups, you look at teams that have made far playoff pushes. I mean, I don't know how many times just a single goalie has played throughout the whole playoffs. You know, majority of the time you have 2 bad games in a row and you got to make a change and you need your other goalie to go in there and hopefully win you a game. And, you know, they've been great for us this year. You know, Gus has been a good surprise for us. Obviously we know what talent he had and, you know, with a fresh start here in Minnesota and, you know, having the chance to make a name for himself, and he's been unbelievable for us. And Flower as well. I mean, I think he's 5-0 in his last 5 starts. You know, he's playing, I mean, I think he's a few shy of passing Patrick Waugh at some point. I mean, having that veteran presence back there is awesome for us. And I think it's awesome for Gus too. I mean, he gets to play sometimes behind or in front of, you know, a Hall of Fame goalie. And as a young goalie, I think, I don't know if you can ask for a better situation than that.
You know, I wanted to take you back to what you were saying before about, you know, offense. For a couple of games there, you were scoring 1-2 a game and you were finding ways. And part of the reason is the guys you were just talking about, right? I mean, the goalies, Gustafson and Fleury. And I'll be honest, I mean, at the time I'm thinking to myself, all right, they're finding ways to get points, they're winning, but can they score enough? Are they going to be able to score enough? And then Kaprizov goes out of the lineup and you have 17 goals in 3 games. How do you explain that?
I think that everyone just kind of next man up mentality. I mean, there's no replacing Kirill Kaprizov. I mean, he's one of the best players in the league. The things he does it's not replaceable even by committee sometimes. I mean, it's harder. You can't really replace it. So, I mean, I know guys kind of not necessarily had a group talk, but kind of maybe on one-on-one conversations and with each other and just, hey, like, obviously if we need to start pulling some more weight here. We're missing, you know, a big score for our team and guys need to step up. And it's not just 1-2-3 guys. I mean, everyone's been stepping up. Our new guys we've got at the trade deadline, Sundqvist, Johansson, Klingberg. I mean, they're helping us win games as well, and they've been big pickups for us. You know, you got guys like Revo and Shaw and Dewar scoring for us and making a difference. Everyone's just trying to do a little more extra just based off, obviously, without Kirill's presence. And we've been able to do that as of late.
Ryan, you've played with a lot of skilled players in your career, various stops you've made. Patrick Kane jumps to mind, but there's been others. Is Kirill the most talented player you've ever played with?
He's just a different kind of superstar, I'd say. I mean, like you said, I've played with guys like Kane, Panarin, some really, really good talented players. Obviously, Kirill has so much talent and he's so skilled and smart, but he plays the game so hard, which you don't really see too much. I mean, you know, he's not afraid to hit guys. He's in every battle. He's not floating around. I know, I'm not saying superstars float around, but the way he plays the game, he plays in all areas. He plays defensively. He'll block shots. He'll hit people. He'll obviously, we don't want him getting into scrums and trying to fight someone, but I know he will. And obviously we don't want that, but he's a full rounded NHL player. And I think one of the best in the league.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question, and your answer has to be careful because of the question I'm going to ask you, all right? We've seen Dean Evason on the bench a lot. I've always enjoyed my interactions with him when it's in person. I think he's a terrific coach. Is the dude ever happy?
Yeah, he's happy.
Maybe never looks it.
And maybe tries not to show it. He's a little intense for sure. But, you know, obviously – you know, you kind of want that from your head coach at times. I mean, maybe it's, I think I maybe saw a picture of him smiling after the Flurry fight or almost fight. But yeah, I mean, he's not as serious as he looks on the bench. I think he just has his game face on.
Ryan, most importantly, when you guys are in a stretch run like this, you need to relax at times. It's March Madness. You guys have a team bracket going. How serious is it? And who's your team?
We do. Actually, I do have it on in the background right now. I'm trying not to look over at it too much. it's kind of, our schedule was kind of weird. So the bracketology came out. We had a game that day. And then we flew. And then so things, it was kind of panic mode. The text got sent out with how long that game lasted yesterday. Our bus to the airport wasn't until midnight, so we didn't get home till around 2:30 last night. So a text went out around 2:45 saying, get your picks in by midnight. So I haven't checked to see how many people actually, one, got up in time, or two, even bothered to do it. But there were some, our trainers and our staff were in one, and a few guys, I think, jumped into that one as well. My team this year is, I got Purdue. I put some money on them at the beginning of the season, to win, but, I might've changed courses a little bit and I got UCLA in my bracket to win.
Oof. All right. I'm an Arizona guy. I'm an Arizona grad. So to hear UCLA is, you know, a little hard for me. We'll continue on though. It's a little hard for me to hear that, but you know, let me get through that and we'll get back here. I did want to ask you, I thought it was interesting before when you were talking, you're ripping off some numbers about Fleury close to Patrick Waugh's record in his past five games. You talked about, so are you a numbers guy? Do you look at stats? Are you a stats guy?
I'm definitely not. I think with all this Fleury stuff going on, I think I just kind of browsed through some Fleury stats through Twitter over the last few hours, but I'm definitely not a numbers guy. But some numbers, maybe I am undercover numbers guy, maybe.
more importantly than the numbers about Flower, has he gotten you yet, prank-wise?
He's never admitted it. But, you know, there weren't too many pranks that really went on in our locker room prior. I mean, maybe some smaller stuff here and there a couple times a year. It was our first road trip with him on the team, and I'm like, you know, I started getting dressed maybe 10 minutes before pregame skate and all my laces are in the wrong holes going all different ways. You know, I've been on the team for three and a half years and that's never happened before, and miraculously this guy shows up and somehow my skates are now all screwed up. But he'll never admit to it, and but that's the only one so far. It's, you don't want to poke the bear, you know. I know some guys have pranked him, and it's not a good idea, because it's usually coming back a few times harder.
I gotta imagine with him and Ryan Reeves in the same room, you really got to watch your back.
You know, it's nice though, because I've gotten away with a few things this year to doing some guys, and they always blame Flower. So I've been able to kind of just sneak in the bushes and do some things to some guys, and just no one even thinks I probably shouldn't be admitting that right now. But yeah, so it's nice to have a guy like that, because he'll take the, everyone's going to assume it's him right away.
I've always been curious, you know, it's getting late in the season and the pressure's building up a little bit, and we talked about distractions. Do the pranks pick up now to try and lighten the mood, or do they kind of go away because things are getting so serious at the end of the year?
We haven't had one in a while. I'm trying to think of what the last, there hasn't really been much. I know we got Kalen Addison kind of at the beginning of the season. He rewired his brake to his horn, which was pretty good. He immediately thought of his Flower. And then the Minnesota Wild was filming like a thing on it. So I was kind of caught red handed in that, because they released a video on Instagram and Twitter of me doing all this stuff. So that wasn't obviously ideal, but really hasn't been much I can really think of offhand that has happened this year so far.
Or see, now that would scare me. That would make me think something big is coming if it hasn't happened for a while.
Look, quiet before the storm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Things are getting a little too quiet. Yeah.
And maybe, as Sean was saying, you know, the pressure builds a little bit at this time of the year, that tension getting close to the playoffs. You can cut it a little bit with that. Marc-Andre Fleury is a veteran. He knows what he's doing here.
Yeah. I wouldn't give him any ideas. We like to let him sleep in that department.
Last one for me, Ryan, you spoke about St. Louis last year, and I covered that series, and it was a back and forth series. There's so much that went on. What do you think you guys learned from that series that you can apply to this year when the playoffs start?
Yeah. I mean, every time you go through playoffs, you gain experience. Maybe you don't get as nervous in some situations. You don't feel the nerves. I mean, obviously, I remember my first few playoff games, just how nervous. I mean, yeah, is it just another hockey game? But it's not. You know, it's there's way more on the line. Something, you know, you're trying to win a Stanley Cup, something you've been working on your whole life, and there is that extra nerves in there. And I think anytime, the more games you play, the more comfortable you feel in those big moments. Maybe have a chance to score a goal, and maybe last year it doesn't go in because maybe you're gripping a little too tight. Maybe, you know, this year it's a little easier because you've been there, and you're a little more experienced. So, but you know, it's, you lose a game, you can't be down, you can't be up, you can't be all excited because you won one game, because it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you win or lose. It's just, you got to worry about the next game, regardless of where the series is at. If you lose 5-1 or 3-2, nothing matters besides the next game. So that's kind of just the biggest thing I think guys have taken. And like I said, we've got some guys that maybe that was their first playoffs, but are now a little more experienced this year.
Well, you're close to getting there. There's a lot of fun hockey left to be played. Look out for Flower, and thanks for joining us for this one, all right?
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, we thank Ryan Hartman for jumping on with us, especially, you know, love the fact that we can get a guy, Sean, that was in the news just last night. So that is exciting. Always good for the podcast, good for the listeners, good for us. So that was fun. But like I said, before we got to the interview with Ryan Hartman, you brought up a very interesting point, and I want you to go over it quickly again, just in case anybody forgot because of that interview.
Now, I was saying, if I was in the East, the one team other than those wildcard teams that I would want to play right now is the New York Rangers.
And the reason?
Because they're not very good. They've won 2 out of 13 games in regulation. Patrick Kane has not been the player they expected. I think it's actually thrown them into a bit of disarray as they try and figure out who he is and how he works. And maybe that changes over the next month by the time we get to April 17th. But they're not scoring, right? They brought in two guys to score. They're not scoring goals on a regular basis. They're playing a lot of 2-1, 3-2 games. I'm not as afraid of Igor Shesterkin as I once was. Without Ryan Lindgren, they're kind of a mess on the back end. When I look at all the teams in the East, when I look at that top six, to me, they're the weakest team with the most questions to answer.
All right. So you didn't watch their game against the Capitals then the other night, Tuesday night, where they won 5-3. Mika Zibanejad had a couple goals. Patrick Kane scored on a terrific shot. And they were in control for most, if not all, of that game against a team in Washington that is trying to challenge for a playoff spot. And the reason I bring it up, obviously, I know you paid attention to it. I'm just joking around with that because you do that to me sometimes. The fact is, and I'll counter it by saying the Rangers are figuring this out while winning games. They've won 3 of 4. The one that they lost was to Pittsburgh in a shootout. So we're talking about 3-0-1 in their past 4 games. I think they are. Patrick Kane looks to me, especially in that game against Washington, that he was getting a little bit more comfortable. The fact that he fired the puck the way he did on the power play shows that to me. He's talked about needing to be a player who demands the puck. I want to see how he does that in these next 4 games for the Rangers, because they're tough games. They're all at home. They play Pittsburgh later tonight, Thursday night. They play Pittsburgh again on Saturday, Nashville on Sunday, and Carolina on Tuesday. So those are four pretty tough games, and Patrick Kane's going to have to show that he's demanding the puck, because that's his game. That's where he's at his best. But the way they look right now, I can't argue against what you're saying, because we're talking today on March 16th. As we talk today on March 16th, yeah, I agree with you. The Rangers are the team that I'm looking at and saying, give me them, because they don't have it together, all together yet. They are still working these new parts in. Kane trying to figure it out. Tarasenko, good. A little cold, good. A little cold, right? Ryan Lindgren hasn't played in 8 or 9 games now. Shesterkin doesn't look like the all-world goalie that they need him to be. You're 100% right. As we talk on March 16th, they're the team I want to face. I don't think we'll be talking the same way on April 16th, which is one day before the Stanley Cup playoffs begin, because I think they will get it. I think they're starting to figure it out, how these pieces work together. They understand where they are, and they have the time to figure it out. You're talking about veteran players who, yes, were in positions in the same places for very long periods of time. It's not going to just happen. Like, you know, we're not just going to snap our fingers and they're going to be the same players they were in Chicago and St. Louis, respectively. It's going to take a little time. I think this next month will give them that time to get it together. The biggest factor in all of this, because I do believe Kane's going to get it together and Tarasenko, and I think they're going to figure this out. And then when you look at it, their 4 lines are as good as any lines in the National Hockey League, and their 4th line, which doesn't get any discussion here because we're talking about top players of Jimmy Vesey, Barclay, Goudreau, and Tyler Motte, is one of the best 4th lines in the league right now. As you look at it, that's going to be a really hard line to play against. Then you look at their defense, Lindgren, Fox, Miller, Trouba, you know, Schneider, Mikkola. That's a good top 6 D right there. The biggest question, the biggest factor is going to be Igor Shesterkin. Can Igor Shesterkin rediscover the game that he had not last season, last playoffs? He struggled at the start against Pittsburgh, then he figured it out. He was really good. That's the biggest factor. And that's the unknown, I think, for the Rangers. I have more confidence in saying Kane, Tarasenko, the lines, the chemistry, that's going to get together. It's got to be Shesterkin. That's the biggest one.
Yeah, and I agree, but we're not talking about April 16th. And if we were, I might say the Devils are the team you want to play, because Vitek Vanacek's scaring the living daylights out of me right now. And maybe it's just a slump and overwork or whatever it is. But again, I was at that Devil Tampa Bay game as a fan on Tuesday. He let in that soft goal. It changed the whole game. The Devils had been dominating, and they just, the air went out of the building. It went out of the players. And when that happens in the playoffs, it's going to be titanic, in a bad way. Not that anything is ever titanic in a good way, I guess. But maybe they're the team then, but there's still a month. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. To be honest with you, right now, the team that I would, and I cannot believe I'm going to say, is what we were talking about before. It's the Carolina Hurricanes. They're I'm looking at them. And part of the reason I'm looking at them, I just brought up Shesterkin. You brought up Vanacek. I can bring up their goaltending. Is Freddie Anderson going to be healthy? Because if he's healthy, he's going to play. But you know what? Kochetkov, I think, is their best goalie. He might give them their best shot. But I don't see them playing Kochetkov if Freddie Anderson is healthy. I just don't see that happening. And it actually brings up a debate that Tom Galitti, our colleague, brought up in a story he wrote this week. 10 questions in the last month here before the playoffs begin. And one of those questions was, who's going to finish first in the Metropolitan Division, Carolina or New Jersey? And if you look today, Carolina's got a 2-point lead, Sean. They've got 16 games left, 7 against teams currently in a playoff position. The Devils, 2 points behind with 94, 15 games left. So Carolina's got a game in hand, 8 games left against teams in playoff position. So one more than Carolina. So Carolina's got a game in hand and one fewer game remaining against teams in playoff position, plus a 2-point lead. So it looks to me like the easy answer based on that math is Carolina should finish first. But I would argue, I think the Devils are going to do it. I think the Rangers are going to play Carolina in the first round.
Oh, I don't. I think it's going to be the Hudson River rivalry. I think you're going
hope
to
hope it is, because that'll be a lot of fun.
Sleep in your own bed every night for at least the first round. But yeah, I mean, there's so much hockey left to be played, and so much is going to change. Look how fast things change for Carolina. But the reason I don't want to play Carolina in the first round is, even if I win, I walk out of there just mentally and physically destroyed. Like, and there's something to be said for that. Like, when you look at teams that get deep into the playoffs, they avoid those wars early on, right? Because it just gets harder and harder. But I think Carolina mentally challenges you as much as they physically challenge you. And that's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. You're right. To have to play those kind of games over and over again. They just mentally wear you out. So that would be, whether I could beat Carolina or not, I just don't want that headache.
Yeah, they did that to the Rangers last year. The Rangers end up winning that series in 7 games, and they had nothing left against Tampa Bay. They did take Tampa to 6 games, but they had nothing left in that series. And at the end of that series, even Gerard Gallant, the Rangers coach, said, we ran out of gas. And Carolina had a lot to do with that, So that is a good point, 100% a good point. What's interesting, though, if you look at that, just look at the way the matchups could fall in the Metropolitan Division, the Devils give the Rangers fits. Look, the Devils are going to give everybody fits because they're so fast and they attack, right? But they give the Rangers fits. The Rangers play better against Carolina. It's kind of weird how it works that way. I don't know if it necessarily will be the same in the playoffs. We'll have to see. It's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out. The other question that I thought was quite interesting from Tom was who would finish first in the West? And right now, you look at the Vegas Golden Knights. For a while there, they stumbled, you know, around the All-Star break, you know, coming into the All-Star break, there was questions. I was wondering, like, are they even going to make the playoffs? Because they were really in deep. They were not looking good. They were not playing well. Coming out of the break, they've been much better. They've won 4 in a row, as we talk here on Thursday. Jonathan Quick, 4-0, a 2.22 goals against average, and a .930 save percentage since he got to Vegas. And here is Jonathan Quick with a potential opportunity here to play the Vegas Golden Knights into first place, or keep them in first place ahead of the team that is probably his mortal enemy for the next couple of months. That'll fade, but he doesn't like how he got moved out of LA. He'll be welcomed back. The number's going to go up. He's going to get, you know, he's a Kings legend. He's going to have his number retired, maybe even a statue outside of crypto.com arena, which I still call Staples Center. But what an opportunity here. And the Vegas Golden Knights, again, got to stay healthy, all that stuff. They're looking really good right now.
Yeah, I owe Vegas an apology.
I do too.
I hope they welcome me in when I show up at some point during the playoffs and don't run me out of town on a rail. I thought they were done when all their goaltenders got hurt. You know, Logan Thompson went down. Look, Bruce Cassidy's done things there that are just unbelievable. He really does run a system that's favorable to goalies, right? It limits the amount of chances, and that's allowed some lower tier goalies to look very good in their system. And they found some offense with some of their best players not really contributing. They definitely, at this point, have a chance to win the West. But to me, it's so wide open. The one thing I'm going to say, and I don't know if you noticed, Dan, is in the Super 16 this week, I finally slid off Colorado a little bit.
Yeah,
while they're playing well, like at some point, I kept waiting for the injuries to end. And when the injuries end, they were going to be great. They're not going to end. I've just decided that injuries aren't going to end. They don't know if Gabriel Landeskog's coming back now after months of saying he would be back. Now they're kind of walking it back a little bit and saying maybe, maybe not, maybe start of the playoffs. But he's not going to be the same player in game one of the playoffs that he was before the surgery. So, you know, and then they lose Lehkonen, and that's a huge loss. Like, it's one of those that goes under the radar and people are like, oh, big deal. It's not Mikko Rantanen.
No, it's
not
this guy. Loss.
It's not that guy. He's one of their most important players. Their goaltending, you know, hasn't been fantastic. Look, I think if they have Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar and Rantanen, they're dangerous, but they're nowhere near as dangerous right now as they could be.
No, but they just held the Toronto Maple Leafs to 18 shots on goal. And that is impressive. In Toronto, that is impressive to be able to do that. I mean, that's a team that knows it can get up and down the ice. Colorado's the same. And that game, Colorado had better scoring chances, not dominant in scoring chances. It was the game was essentially, what was it? It was a 1-1 game, right? I mean, MacKinnon wins it in the shootout. It's a 1-1 game for two plus periods because it, you know, it was 1-1 with about, you know, five and change remaining in the first period and ends up 2-1 in shootout. But Colorado held Toronto to 18 shots on goal. Do you think Colorado can do that? You think they can play that way in the playoffs to go on another deep run to where maybe their offense, especially with questions about Landeskog and Lehkonen, obviously, to more, maybe their offense isn't what it was, but could their style of play and goaltending carry them in that way to where they can limit shots and they can do things like that? Can they recreate that game they played against Toronto in a 7-game playoff series?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they have a championship pedigree. They have a completely underrated coach. And they have players who can do things that maybe you don't think they can because they don't have to. They're fast. They're skilled. They can play almost any way you want to play, right? If you want to be the Edmonton Oilers and you want to go up and down the ice, they'll do that while limiting you a little bit. If you want to be the Dallas Stars and be more about limiting chances and trying to grind out a 3-2 game, they can do that as well. So I still like them a lot. I don't think they're winning anything in the regular season. I always thought that they were going to come back and make a run for at least the Central Division title. I don't know that that's the case now. I don't want any part of them in the playoffs. I want to make it to the Western Conference Final without seeing the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, and I think it was Nathan MacKinnon, right? He said it the other day, if they end up winning a wild card, ain't nobody wants to see them.
That's right? What Daryl Sutter said last year, right?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you go in there and what? You play four games and
yeah, good luck.
Good luck, right? Good luck. It's over. So yeah, they're by the way, you had them, I think, at number six. That was you falling off Colorado. You put up number six in your Super 16. I am at 12. And they pulled in after all the math was done for all 13 of us doing the Super 16. They pulled in at 11. So I was closer. You still had them ranked higher than a lot of other people. So, but that was you pulling back.
You're like the Price is Right. You win because you're closer.
That's right. The closest without going over either. Right.
You went over.
Well, no, I went over. I had them at 12. They were 11. So I lose. All right, so one last thing, Sean, before we get out of here. I thought it was an interesting question. I didn't do the mailbag this week. Tom Glitty did the mailbag.
Slacker.
I know, total slacker. I was enjoying the sun and the beach in Florida, you know.
Just how's your golf game?
Terrible. Never play. Never. I have not stepped foot on a golf course to play golf in probably 25 years.
How is the Sea-Doo?
That didn't do that this time. No. This was all work. This was an all work trip. Are you kidding?
Sure.
It was an all work trip. There was no bathing suit brought, let alone put on. There was nothing.
Well, anyway. the people of Palm Beach, thank you for that.
Yeah, exactly. They do. Anyway, before we get out of here, one question that was in the mailbag that I found interesting was about playoff teams peaking too early. Are there any teams that we think are going to be in the playoffs that we think have peaked too early? I mean, look, you can look at the Boston Bruins and say, well, 50 wins and what, 63 games, and now they've lost 3 of 4. It's not the Boston Bruins to me. The team I look at, Sean, that says, I'm not so sure, is the Seattle Kraken. Seattle Kraken, remember they won 8 games in a row in January, right? That run in January that they had. And yes, I did crunch the numbers on this one, so I'm going to look at them. At the time they won 8 games in a row, Seattle was 26-12-4. That was on January 14th that they won that 8th game in a row. Since then, 11-11-3. And in that 11-11-3 includes a 5-game winning streak. Right? So they did string together something there. No one expected Seattle to be where they are right now. I think they've overachieved all season long from what expectations were of them, but they've been in a playoff position pretty much all season long, and they remain in a playoff position. And I don't see them falling out of a playoff position. But if you want to talk about a team that's going to make the playoffs of the 16 that I'm saying, give me that team as my opponent, it's the Seattle Kraken.
Well, I could see that. And I hate to say this because, like I said, Tom Fitzgerald did the show last week and he was great, a friend of the show. I'm concerned the Devils may have peaked too early.
They've been pretty good of late too, though.
I understand. I'm telling you, Vanacek, like when you look at his numbers lately, and I don't know how it gets better, because how do you hide him? You're in the middle of a playoff chase. How do you rest him? You know, Blackwood's hurt, so you're down to Schmid. You know, they're trying to spot him where they can, and he's played well for them. But if you're number one goalie, if you're nervous about putting him in a game and you're going into the playoffs that way, yowza.
By the way, when the Seattle Kraken make the Stanley Cup final, I hope they let me in the building.
That'd be awesome if they didn't. You know what I hope happens in the Stanley Cup final before
that
we
go? That was cold, by the way. That was really cold.
You know what I hope happens in the Stanley Cup playoffs before we get to the final and they don't let you in the building?
What?
Another Big City Greens telecast.
Oh, that was fun.
It was awesome.
It was a lot of fun. Actually, I told my 8-year-old to turn it on. He was not a Big City Greens watcher, never saw the show before. I told him, turn it on. He turned it on. He watched the whole game. And this morning, while eating breakfast, was watching Big City Greens.
See, and that's the idea, right? Like, you expose yourself to other fan bases.
Yeah.
Right? And you expose your product and they expose their product. It's synergy. And I think it's great because you don't have to watch it. It wasn't the only way to watch that game. You want to watch the old school game with Mark Messier as the analyst? You do that.
Yeah.
You want to have a little fun, or you got kids and you want to watch the game and they want to watch something else. There's your compromise. And maybe you introduce some kids into the game and they become lifelong fans. Like, we all had to be introduced to the game at some point. And for us, for you, I would assume for me, it was my dad, and there were 5 channels of TV and there was nothing else to watch. So let's sit down and watch the Bruins game on WSBK, and the lifelong memories. That's not the way anymore. Now my kids are, well, they're older, but they're off on YouTube. They're off on this. They're off on that. There's no sitting in front of the TV with 2 things to watch and you pick one and it happens to be a hockey game. And all of a sudden your kid's like, oh, I really like hockey. You have to find new ways to do it. And I thought this was a really brilliant way to do it. And I hope they do more of it.
Technology is amazing. And Kevin Weeks was awesome. Like, if you're a kid and you're learning hockey, listening to Kevin Weeks on that broadcast was terrific. Like, he was really good. It was a great broadcast. I hope they do more of it. The fact that they can do it is, I mean, I don't understand that stuff. You know, I can barely do the math that you did, 17 times 3 to get to 51, right? I mean, the technology there, it's outstanding. I hope they do more of it. Like I said, my 8-year-old loved it. And now he's watching that show. And he said to me this morning, he goes, this is a pretty fun show. You know, so like They're into it. It worked, at least for one viewer. It worked for one.
Dan, I've been off this whole podcast since I did 17 times three. I've been one step slow. I've been like VTech Vanacek. I kind of peaked right there, and I need a little rest. So I'm going to go rest my brain until next week.
There's your math for the day. You should go rest your brain. Continue to try to figure things out as this thing plays out. We'll all do the same. We thank Ryan Hartman for jumping on with us. It was great stuff. This was fun, Sean. We'll do it again next week. And everybody enjoy the hockey.